Chapter 15. Minutes later, two security guards entered the command salon with Leia between them. They presented a ridiculous picture. Two tall men in crisp uniforms, their buckles, buttons, visors, and blasters gleaming, flanking a diminutive graying woman in plain Jedi robes. Still, Kytus didn't think Leia looked diminished enough. She needed to be in restraints, her lightsaber missing from her belt, her expression crestfallen, her eyes defeated. She needed to be suffering for all her misbehavior since the conflict with Corellia began. Well, reality would match his imagination soon enough. He gestured at the guards, and they spun and left the salon. The door shut behind them. He didn't bother to keep impatience and indifference out of his voice.
Well?
Leia looked him over. Clearly, the visual image he presented, a tall, dangerous force user in all black garments and cloak, was again reminding her of her father more than her son. And Kytus enjoyed having discomfited her. But she didn't let what she was feeling be reflected in her face or voice.
Jason, it's time for you to look at yourself.
I'm well aware of what I look like, Mother. I have to cultivate my image carefully for Holonews appearances.
I'm not talking about your looks. I'm talking about your life.
He sighed.
You know, I was actually hoping you would come up with some exciting, imaginative new argument to sway me from my path. Not that it has a chance of succeeding, but it would be more entertaining. Don't you have some new heart-wrenching appeal? Some brilliant metaphor to hurl at me and cause me to double over in the anguish of guilt, to reevaluate my whole ethical structure?
She shook her head, and there was no missing the sadness in her eyes.
All I have is the truth and the memory of who you used to be.
He pressed a button on the arm of his chair. The door behind Leia slid open.
You're wasting my time. Leave now.
She glanced at the button, and it clicked down without Kytus's help. The door slid closed again.
You no longer have time for me?
Which you? The mother you used to be, or the interplanetary criminal you've become? I'm not the only one who's changed.
History decides who's a criminal, Jason.
Finally, real irritation began to stir within Kytus, and he rose to the argument.
No, the law decides who's a criminal. History just forgives them, and for reasons as stupid as they are varied. Han Solo was a spice smuggler, an unapologetic lawbreaker. You, even when you were a teenager, were a traitor to the legitimate galactic government, a conspirator planning war and overthrow. The puppet government you put in place may have forgiven you both, but you'll be criminals for the rest of your lives.
Her expression graduated to scorn.
Have you ever studied Darth Vader? Clearly you got your intelligence and your political acumen from your grandfather.
He nodded.
There, we are in agreement.
In the private hangar bay set aside for the use of Anakin Solo's commander, a team of security specialists, carrying standard scanning gear, walked down the yacht's boarding ramp. Moments after the last one reached the hangar floor, the ramp rose into place, sealing the yacht. Jaina Solo, stretched out on her back in an oppressively enclosed space, watched them leave. She did not watch them directly, but through the portable monitor she held in her hands. A shielded data feed led from the device into the metal wall of this smuggling compartment. Beside her, Han stirred, but did not open his eyes.
Are they gone?
Jaina twisted a dial at the bottom of the screen, flipping its view through all of the Love Commander's exterior holocam feeds.
No, they're walking the yacht perimeter, doing a final scan.
Irritated, she checked her chrono.
How long can Mom keep Jason distracted?
Han shrugged.
Hard to guess. My estimate is that he's not going to fall for guilt, but he's pretty reactionary these days. If she can push the right argument buttons, he'll be defending his politics and decisions from now until his next birthday.
How's that going to make Mom feel?
Han's expression turned sad.
How do you think?
An ominous scratching sounded from the far end of the compartment. Jaina looked past her feet to the cage situated there on the compartment floor. A cube 1 meter in each dimension, it was made of thin, brightly painted durasteel bars. Within it was a jagged piece of polymer shaped like a stunted tree bowl, and holding onto the sculpture was a reptile, a little over a meter long, greenish, with two sets of clawed legs and a long tail. It stared at them as if waiting for a reply to its statement. Jaina wrinkled her nose at it.
I hate that thing.
It was an Isalamir, a lizard from the world of Mirkur, one of a species that had long ago evolved the ability to project an invisible bubble of force energy in counterbalance to the force all around it, making everything inside its border undetectable by force sensitives outside its range. So long as Jaina and Han, and Zek and Jag in the next compartment, remained nearby, Jason could not detect them. Of course, force sensitives within the bubble were blind to the force while he remained there. Han's voice turned mocking.
Poor little girl. Suddenly has to rely on just her sight, hearing, and wits.
It's still like losing one of your senses.
Just like her old man.
He opened an eye and peered down at the reptile. He waved.
Hang on there, little guy. I'll get you back to Card when we're all done here.
As if in response, the Isalamir flicked out its tongue for a fraction of a second. Movement on the monitor drew Jaina's attention.
Sensor crew is leaving, but there are still two guards on the exit, and two just outside.
Han leaned over to peer at the monitor.
Got the hangar holocams picked out?
Jaina nodded.
Yeah. I don't want to force-flash them constantly, but we can use blind spots between parked vehicles a lot of the time. And we have one piece of real luck. Jason's shuttle is right here, in this hangar.
Let's go.
Han exerted himself against the durasteel panel directly overhead, and it swung open, admitting cool air from the Love Commander's atmosphere conditioners. They executed their plan in several stages, each accomplished very quickly and with the precision that only Jedi and someone like Han Solo could manage. Silently, the four exited the Love Commander through a cargo hatch in the blind spot between her starboard side and the massive maintenance machinery immediately beside her. Jaina, carrying the electronics package whose construction had been supervised by Iella Antilles, a package now disguised as a mouse droid, reached a wall data jack and plugged the package in. Its code, optimized not only for this task, but for this specific vessel as well, sampled hangar holocom feeds, looped them, and extracted visual glitches, such as glow rod flickers, that might alert viewers they were watching a recording. Then the programming subverted security measures, not the ship's main programming, just those pertaining to the holocams, and began sending the looped recordings instead of the live feeds to the bridge. Next, as Han and Jag covered the door from concealed positions, Jaina and Zek rushed the guards there. The advantage of surprise allowed them to cross meters of distance before the guards could bring their blaster rifles into line, and a few swift blows put them down. The Jedi dragged them aside, out of sight of the door. The third stage was just as potentially dangerous and just as successful. The four of them positioned themselves out of sight of the hangar doors, two to either side, and then opened them. They heard a surprised exchange from the guards there, but no footsteps suggesting additional traffic out in the corridor. Blaster rifles at the ready, the two guards stepped into the hangar. As the pair caught sight of the intruders in their peripheral vision, Jag hit the button to shut the doors. Jaina and Zek stepped forward and launched attacks. Jaina's kick took her target clean off his feet, breaking ribs despite his chest armor and sending him into deep unconsciousness. But Zek's opponent, clearly an experienced hand-to-hand combatant, blocked Zek's punch with his rifle butt and swung the barrel around to fire. So Han shot him in the face. His blaster pistol was set on stun, and the guard merely spasmed and fell. Zek breathed a relieved sigh, not at the removal of danger, but at his opponent's size.
This one's big enough.
Get into his armor and get going.
Jaina took up her ersatz mouse droid and headed toward Jason's shuttle.
Despite what Dad says, we can't guess how long Mom's distraction will give us.
Yes, boss.
Han helped Zek strip the armor from the tallest guard and don it. He lowered his voice to a whisper so Jaina would not hear.
I'm used to her being intense, but I don't think I've seen her flash a smile in, I don't know, months.
She hasn't. She's lost a lot since this war began.
Leia's lost just as much, and Leia can still smile. Leia knows that she has to from time to time, or go crazy.
I don't think it's a problem anymore, Han. I think Jag got through to her.
Han glanced over at his daughter, who, having cracked the shuttle door's security, was just entering that vehicle.
I hope you're right.
Zek stood and swept his long hair up to the top of his head, holding it there while Han put the last piece of armor, his helmet, in place. Zek pulled the helmet down low and picked up the guard's blaster rifle.
Next stop, tractor beams, and the installation of some very specialized holocom gear.
Han gave him a lopsided smile.
Jason's going to get sick of people improving his ship.
Good.
So if you believe that Palpatine's rule as Emperor was legitimate, you have to believe that any government, no matter how destructive, is legitimate.
Leia practically spat the words out.
Why did we bother taking back Coruscant from the Yuuzhan Vong? By your figuring, they were the legitimate rulers of the galaxy.
Kytus stirred, irritated, but did not rise.
That's not what I said. And don't put words in my mouth. Palpatine worked within the system to gain prominence. That establishes a continuity of government. That's part of the legitimacy. What you did with the rebels, like what the Yuuzhan Vong did, was come in like an agricultural planetformer, digging up and destroying everything in its path.
A second set of doors, the ones leading forward to the bridge, opened. Lieutenant Tebbutt stood there, looking momentarily surprised to have interrupted the heated exchange between two of the most famous people in the galaxy. Grateful for the reprieve, Kytus swiveled his chair toward her.
Yes?
We've dropped out of hyperspace, Colonel. We're at the negotiation site.
Thank you.
Kytus rose.
Come to the bridge, Mother. In the unlikely event that this is not some sort of trap by your Confederation friends, you might witness a successful negotiation for their legitimate return to the Galactic Alliance.
Leia accompanied him to the door.
I can't root for either result.
You don't deserve to negotiate and benefit from a peace. And I don't want to be here if it's a trap.
Behind Tebat, they walked through into the bridge and were assailed by all its usual noise. Chatter of officers at their stations in the pits to either side of the main walkway, the hum of computers and other machinery, the distorted and modulated voices of personnel coming across comm frequencies and intercoms. Kytus marched up the walkway to the vast viewports at the bow end. He could see the hull of the Anakin Solo stretching away below and before him, with the domes of its gravity well generators protruding like habitat shells, and the distant, slightly irregular shapes of enemy ships among the unwinking stars.
Report.
The officer in the sensor station, a woman with a Coruscanti accent, called up,
They dropped out of hyperspace 30 seconds after we did. Their numbers match ours, ship for ship. We're running data on the ships themselves. The Anakin Solo's opposite number is the star destroyer Valorum.
Valorum?
Kytus's surprise was genuine.
Intelligence, best guess. Did they name her for one of Palpatine's political opponents to goad me?
No, sir.
The man at the intelligence station was dark-skinned. Though young, he was completely bald, and his accent suggested worlds of the unknown regions.
That was her original name upon launch, about 60 years ago. She's Victory Class, from the last years of the Old Republic.
Kytus turned to his mother.
Ancient hardware. They're getting desperate.
Leia nodded.
Which affects the chances of this being a legitimate negotiation and a trap equally. So it's information, but not informative.
Stop trying to teach me politics, Mother. I've already attained the highest rank you ever did, and I'm not done yet.
Except that I attained it by being elected to it, not by rewriting the law and jailing my predecessor.
Kytus turned away, shaking his head. Leia was deluded if she thought there was a meaningful difference.
Communications. Has the enemy initiated comm contact?
Lieutenant Tebat, back at her station, nodded.
Yes, sir. They've sent routine greetings and asked for you.
Let them wait. Have we established contact with the blue diver?
Yes, sir.
Put her on holo.
A moment later, a hologram swam into resolution before Kytus and Leia. It showed a female of the Duros people, with bluish skin, large red eyes, and a lipless slit for a mouth with no nose above it. She wore a white admiral's uniform. She nodded to Kytus.
Colonel.
Recognizing Leia, she nodded again, her voice taking on a slight note of surprise.
Jedi Solo?
No, Admiral Limpin. Sadly, my mother has not seen the light of reason and rejoined the Alliance. Are you on station?
We are.
Kytus glanced his mother's way.
I plan no violation of the terms of our meeting today, Mother. But if they spring a trap, I have elements of the Second Fleet standing by to jump in as a little surprise. Speaking of surprises, Admiral, if our holocom contact is broken for more than 15 seconds, consider that authorization to jump in. They could always manage some sort of sabotage or jamming to break contact between us.
Understood, sir.
Anakin Solo standing by.
The hologram of Admiral Limpin vanished. Kytus's datapad tweeted, indicating that he had received a message, and the intelligence officer called,
That's the breakdown of enemy forces, sir. All old ships, some of them nearly derelicts. Some are still listed as decommissioned.
Kytus didn't bother to read the listing.
Very good. Communications. Put the enemy commander on. Let's get this farce moving.
There was no hologram this time. The Valorum was either too old to have a holotransmitter, or too strapped for resources to use one. Monitors all over the bridge, including those near the bow viewports, flickered simultaneously to show an aging woman, long-faced, in the uniform of a Corellian Defense Force captain. Kytus moved up to stand before one of the monitors. Tebbutt nodded to him to let him know its holocam was now broadcasting. Kytus allowed a little discontent to creep into his voice.
A captain? They sent only a naval captain for this negotiation?
Captain Hawklaw.
The Corellian woman gave him a nod of mock-friendly greeting.
Technically you're a colonel, as I recall, but we both have the power and authority to enter into binding negotiations.
I suppose. So you're prepared to surrender?
I'm prepared to come to the best agreement that is in everyone's interest, involving the Corellian system's return to the Alliance. But if your first words are going to be, "So you're prepared to surrender," this could take even longer than it has to. I see you're standing. Perhaps you should summon a chair.
Kytus could see that Captain Hawklaw was seated in a comfortably padded officer's chair at the back of her bridge.
Thank you, no. Let's begin.